Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
The 2020 Florida lawmaking session is officially underway in what Governor Ron DeSantis insists will be the year of the teacher.
Setting a minimum salary for public school teachers at $47,500.
But more than a few teachers say they and the schools they teach in are still getting the short end of the state's funding stick.
It is something that our state legislature has created because of their lack of respect and their lack of funding for public schools.
We'll also get the latest on what the legislative leadership considers this year's hot-button issues, along with updates on medical marijuana and gun control, amongst other things. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. The start of the Florida lawmaking session traditionally includes the governor's State of the State speech. This year's session did not break from that tradition, and this was the second such speech for Governor Ron DeSantis. He recapped some of the main points from last year's talk, and with the state topping the nation in terms of population growth revenue for 6 years running, as well as low taxes and reduced regulations, he touted Florida's positive business climate.
We have the good fortune to be attracting investment in business activity and have good potential for further growth in areas such as aerospace, financial services, healthcare, and manufacturing. To realize this potential, Florida needs to tax lightly, spend wisely, and regulate reasonably.
Urging lawmakers essentially not to mess up a good thing. Another good thing, said the governor, was the consequence of one of his first year's priorities as the state's chief executive.
When I took office last year, I issued a sweeping executive order outlining a bold approach to protecting our natural resources, improving water quality, and restoring the Everglades. And I did so in part because I believe that stewardship of our natural resources is key to our economic well-being.
Fast forward a year, and DeSantis said, with help from his presidential pal, Donald Trump, the Everglades is coming back. Blue-green algae and red tide are on the run, and invasive species like Burmese pythons are being hunted into submission. Governor DeSantis insists this year will be the year of the teacher.
This will make it easier for us to get talented college graduates to enter the profession and will help us retain many of the good teachers we have now. Now, my plan will lead to a substantial pay increase for over 100,000 current teachers throughout the state.
Still, not every teacher agrees, including the more than 5,000 educators and school support people who showed up at the Capitol the day before. Also, some powerful members of the legislature have also expressed reservations about the governor's school funding plan. The governor, however, had no reservations about his first year appointments to the Florida Supreme Court.
And I'm pleased to report that the appointments were well received, so much so that two of the three have already been promoted to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit.
One issue that's already ramping up to be among the most controversial of this year's session is requiring minors to have parental consent for abortions. Governor DeSantis's take on that matter took all of 9 seconds of his speech.
I also hope that the legislature will send me this session the parental consent bill that was debated last year, passed by the House, but not passed by the Senate.
That bill was vigorously opposed by Democrats in both the House and Senate. As for the rest of the governor's priorities, they brought this response from Senate Minority Leader Audrey Gibson, Democrat from Jacksonville.
With pretty much the same budget, priorities and leftover promises from last year. I hope that this is not only the year of the teacher, but the year the governor does what he said he would do by ensuring the affordability of a healthy Florida, protecting our seniors from cutting their medications in half, allowing individuals to vote who have the constitutional right to do so, and protecting our economy's growth by allowing those who have come to Florida to live and work and to do so without fear.
And Gibson's House colleague, Minority Leader Keone McGee of Miami, had his own critiques of the DeSantis agenda.
You were promised lower taxes, but your lower taxes were given to big corporations while you were saddled with their higher tax responsibilities. Yes, you are correct again. You were promised the version of Florida's American dream, but you were given a nightmare due to our affordable housing crisis.
But the speeches, at least these speeches, are over. Now the real work gets underway in the committee rooms and floor debates happening over the next 60 days. We just mentioned education spending and the descent of thousands of public school employees on the Florida Capitol on Monday. Florida's current average teacher salary remains among the lowest in the nation. The Florida Education Association says the state suffers from high turnover rates and teacher shortages. Capitol reporters Robbie Gaffney and Victoria Dominguez report teachers marched to the state Capitol Monday demanding more funding for education.
That's thousands of Florida teachers marching to the Capitol steps demanding higher pay. When asked how much they made, this is how teachers answered.
Less than $45,000, and I've been teaching for 11 years.
Really, it should come out like $67,000, something like that.
Right now, I would say that I'm over $50,000, but less than $70,000.
That's Tiffany Bazemore and Dora Ramos from Jacksonville and Lisa Camucho-Zito from Orlando. The current proposal from Governor Ron DeSantis would raise the minimum salary for new teachers to $47,500. But United Teachers of Dade President Carla Hernandez-Matz says that doesn't cover everyone.
He only talked about beginning teachers. He did not talk about the rest of the educational community. We're talking about paraprofessionals. We're talking about the security monitors, the clerical workers, everybody that's part of our educational community, the veteran teachers.
We love community.
Rain De Lima is in the crowd. She's taught for 34 years and earns $70,000 annually, but she says that's not enough to cover the cost of living in Miami.
I have no children. I will never have any dependents, but I am here. These are my future.
De Lima motions to two students alongside her. She says it's not just the pay that upsets her, but the cutting of positions like her school's librarians.
I don't know when last I've seen my students check out a book.
Tallahassee's Rickards High School band plays as people stream up to Florida's historical old Capitol. Those like Florida Education Association President Frederick Ingram are pushing for more than just pay hikes. He claims DeSantis' proposed budget doesn't address some of the deeper issues in Florida's school system, issues Ingram says those who've worked in education for years know intimately.
It needs some help, and we got a bunch of teachers out here who can help you with a lesson plan. Thank you all so much.
Besides demanding higher pay for teachers who aren't just starting out, demonstrators emphasize the need to increase overall education funding. Lily Eskelson-Garcia, president of the National Education Association, said this is crucial.
Special education, English language learners, reading programs for children in deep poverty. Education is our national community good.
There are now three leading teacher pay plans pending before the legislature. DeSantis's, another by Senate Republicans that would give districts a lump sum to spend on salaries, and a plan by Democrats that would cover teachers and other school personnel with an initial 3% cost of living bump, followed by a 4.5% pay hike for the next 10 years. I'm Robbie Gaffney, and I'm Victoria Dominguez.
Still to come on Capitol Report, leaders in the House and Senate are angling to leave their marks on the 2020 legislative session.
We have this session the opportunity to set the bar for the 2020s.
A bill closing the so-called gun show loophole is cautiously working its way through the legislature despite unyielding opposition from Tallahassee's most powerful gun advocate.
It appears to be an actual attempt to ban private sales through red tape and fear.
St. Petersburg Republican Senator Jeff Brandes says it's time to get rid of the way Florida regulates marijuana by allowing more licenses.
This bill looks to do away with vertical integration and to end the cartel system that exists in Florida.
And Florida is among the states looking to force the issue of athlete pay on the NCAA. California passed a law to do so last year. Three House committees held a joint meeting on the subject Monday.
We're not just talking about the star football player. We're talking about the backup who can start their own business.
Support for Capital Report is provided by Cloud Navigator, providing cloud computing services and creating secure and productive workplaces for businesses and government agencies. Cloud Navigator, a Microsoft Cloud Platform partner operating throughout the Southeast. On the web at cloudnav.com.
Teacher pay and health care spending are among the top issues Florida leaders listed as they made their opening statements on the first day of the legislative session. Regan McCarthy has more.
Members, since the 1960s, the House has maintained a tradition of naming the doctor of the day. Last year, the tradition was modernized with a telehealth connection. And this year, Dr. Casarino enables us to break new ground by serving as the first nurse practitioner of the day. We are proud to have you here with us. Thank you.
House Speaker Jose Oliva says his chamber will put its full strength behind paving the way for advanced nurse practitioners to work independently.
Allowing advanced nurse practitioners to practice independently will have immediate positive effects on access and affordability. Members, it is truly a stain upon a state that prides itself on leading to even humor talk of patient safety coming from interest groups when we know now, beyond a shadow of a doubt, of its safety and of its efficacy.
Oliva says he's also committed to supporting the governor's efforts to raise pay for teachers. But he told reporters he's not convinced the governor's plan is the best way to do it.
We've made a commitment to the governor that we will put forth a significant teacher pay increase, but it has to be sustainable and equitable. We can't simply go after some target and say we want to be number two in the nation. Again, two compared to what? Compared to a state whose cost of living is significantly higher than ours? We have to take the right approach to this so that it is something that we can sustain. If we get in a bad economy, it is something we can sustain. But the House is committed to supporting the governor on that priority.
Meanwhile, across the rotunda in the Senate, President Bill Galvano says specific agenda items aren't his focus. Instead, he wants to concentrate on constructive debate and collaboration. Galvano told fellow lawmakers he hopes to set a positive tone for legislators in the new decade.
The Senate seated before me today will always be unique in history. You all are the first Senate of a new decade. We have this session the opportunity to set the bar for the 2020s.
Galvano says he hopes lawmakers will not follow the example of Washington, D.C., but instead Congress will look to Florida to see how to put politics aside and find ways to work together. He faced that challenge just hours later. During a press conference following the opening day remarks, Galvano said he would cautiously consider Oliva's push to give nurse practitioners a larger scope of practice.
When I look at healthcare, it's a three-legged stool. Certainly cost is one leg of the stool, and we have to be very cognizant about it. But you also have access, and then you have quality. And so we're going to measure all of those aspects. I've always been very cautious about letting certain groups achieve legislatively what was not achieved academically.
Galvano says another issue he expects to work on with the House is a move to ensure people buying guns in private sales first go through a background check. Galvano stopped short of calling the issue a priority, but did say it is important. Oliva has already indicated he has concerns with the move. I'm Regan McCarthy.
There's one significant piece of legislation involving firearms that's up for consideration in this year's session. We get the details from Steve Bosquet.
4 months ago, a leading Republican senator offered one answer to Florida's problem with mass gun violence: a law requiring stronger background checks and closing the notorious loophole in the many private gun sales across the state. That senator, Tom Lee of Tampa, is following through with a wide-ranging bill that would create a new system in Florida to track private gun sales. Lee chairs the Senate Infrastructure and Security Committee, which passed the bill Monday, the day before the start of the regular session, an unmistakable signal that a background check law is a priority of Senate President Bill Galvano. Lee's bill, Senate Bill 7028, would require background checks and a 3-day waiting period for gun sales in public areas like flea markets and gun shows. Lee made it clear from the outset that his proposal is an incremental step, nothing more.
This bill, this committee proposed committee bill, is our best effort to try to improve public safety on the margins here in the state of Florida. No one represents this as a panacea.
The Senate bill puts the responsibility squarely on the gun seller to be sure that gun buyers are at least 21 years old and are legitimate buyers without criminal records or other disqualifying factors like a dishonorable discharge from the military. Sellers have to get notarized affidavits from buyers. None of this went over very well with the National Rifle Association and its longtime lobbyist Marion Hammer, who called it the worst universal background check language she'd ever seen, and gun control on steroids.
It appears to be an actual attempt to ban private sales through red tape and fear, asking average citizens to create what amounts to a government form and get it notarized is ridiculous.
As Lee's committee discussed the new gun safety proposals, dozens of public school teachers in Tallahassee for an education rally voiced their support. So did Beth Dumond, a volunteer activist with Moms Demand Action, a national grassroots organization working to end gun violence.
Moms Demand Action campaigns for new and stronger solutions to lax gun laws and loopholes that jeopardize the safety of our families and communities. We don't think that this ever has to be in conflict with safe, responsible gun ownership. So we are encouraged, and thank you, to see Senate Bill 7028 introduced and to support it as a positive first step toward ensuring background checks on all gun sales here in Florida.
The background check proposal also would prevent access to firearms by a person of any age who is of, quote, unsound mind. But the bill doesn't define what that means, and Lee acknowledged that that's a problem that needs fixing. Closing the gun show loophole has gotten off to a fast start, but it still has a very long way to go. I'm Steve Bosquet.
One Republican senator from St. Petersburg wants to change the state's medical marijuana system and legalize the drug for adults. He hasn't been shy in the past when it comes to criticizing the current system and now wants to dismantle it. Blaise Gainey talked with Jeff Brandis about exactly what his bill does.
When lawmakers created the framework for the medical marijuana system, they made it vertical, meaning companies that got licenses would handle everything from growing to selling and transportation. But only a small number of licenses were available. Senator Jeff Brandis says companies took advantage.
We have people who are essentially hoarding licenses. They got these licenses, but they had no intention of growing, processing, selling to the retail market. But they're now they're trying to sell their market sometimes for $40 million.
FloraGrown, a group that didn't receive a license, challenged the framework in the courts. Judges ruled the current system unconstitutional. One judge called it an unlawful, vertically integrated oligopoly. However, an appeal put a pause on plans to create a new system. This session, Senator Jeff Brandis wants to take the issue back from the courts by filing a bill that would revamp Florida's marijuana rules.
This bill looks to do away with vertical integration and to end the cartel system that exists in Florida.
Brandis isn't the only one who has concerns with the current system. Before the 2019 session, Governor Ron DeSantis called for the legislature to address a piece of the law that restricted patients' access to smokable marijuana. The issue came from the 2016 constitutional amendment allowing for medical marijuana. The legislature restricted access to smokable marijuana, but DeSantis says the amendment never called for that limitation. He also raised concerns about the vertical system.
I look at how some of this was created, where they created a cartel, essentially. I don't know that the amendment necessarily prohibits that, but that is not good policy. So I'd like them to address that as well.
Lawmakers did make a change that allows smokable marijuana. The so-called cartel issue remains. Brandis hopes to address that.
The challenge you have today is if you want to be in the medical marijuana business, you basically have to, one, get a license, which costs, you know, $40 million. But then you have to also set up a grow, a processing facility, and retail facilities in order to distribute your product. And so you need to have another $40 million in order to just be in the business. Our bill allows small business owners to be in the business. If you want to just own a retail facility, it allows you to just own a retail facility and buy from a variety of different producers.
But that's not all his bill does.
Another major component of this bill is if you have a previous possession charge, this will allow you to go to the court to get that expunged from your record. We think that that's a major provision that should not be overlooked, that there are thousands of people in Florida with simple possession charges for marijuana.
Brandis's bill comes as Make It Legal Florida, a group pushing a constitutional amendment to legalize marijuana, dropped a push to get its proposal on the 2020 ballot. Make It Legal was one of the two groups attempting to put a measure legalizing marijuana to a vote this year. Both failed, but several polls show the state supports legalization.
To me, this is a matter of when, not if. We believe that the whole trajectory in the country and in the state of Florida is moving towards adult use.
A similar bill in the House was filed Monday. It's sponsored by Winter Park Representative Democrat Carlos Guillermo Smith. I'm Blaze Ganey.
Gina Jordan takes a look ahead to some of tomorrow's expected highlights at the Florida Capitol.
Here's a look at what's happening Wednesday at the Florida Capitol. The state wants to wrestle control of your sunscreen away from local governments. The Senate Rules Committee will take up a bill to block local regulation of over-the-counter drugs and cosmetics. The bill stems from a decision by the city of Key West to ban types of sunscreen containing certain chemicals that could damage coral reefs. The Senate Judiciary Committee will take up a proposal requiring parental consent before a minor can have an abortion. Current law says parents simply have to be notified. Changes will be considered for the state's iBudget program. It provides services to thousands of people with developmental and intellectual disabilities. Another bill seeks to limit patients' out-of-pocket costs for insulin prescriptions. State economists will update general revenue projections. The fund plays a key role in schools, health programs, and prisons. Lawmakers will use the projections as they negotiate a budget for the fiscal year that begins in July. And a confirmation hearing will be held for Surgeon General Scott Rivkes, who doubles as Secretary of the Florida Department of Health. He was appointed by Governor Ron DeSantis in April. Rivkes faces questions about how he's splitting his time working at the University of Florida College of Medicine. He was also investigated for sexual harassment at the university. That's some of what's happening tomorrow in the Florida legislature. I'm Gina Jordan.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, Florida is among the states looking to force the issue of athlete pay on the NCAA. California passed a law to do so last year. Ryan Daly reports three House committees held a joint meeting on the subject on Monday.
The legislation filed in Florida allows collegiate athletes to be paid for their name, image, and likeness. The NCAA precludes athletes from making money on things like endorsement deals and social media accounts. There are two different bills in each chamber looking to address the issue. One of them is being carried by House Minority Leader Keone McGee.
The NCAA has had over 100 years to rectify and get this issue settled. They failed to do it, and today what we're going to do is see a workshop where many different minds come together to create a product that would benefit the students of this great state.
Monday's meeting brought together the House Judiciary, Education, and Commerce panels. Paul Renner chairs the Judiciary Committee. He wants to go ahead with legislation despite the NCAA's claim it's working on its own plan.
You need to have a responsible reform nationwide at some point, but that doesn't, again, preclude us from joining other states and taking the lead and saying, this is our expectation. If you're going to come play sports in Florida, this is what some minimums you should enjoy.
The NCAA's governing board has directed its three divisions to consider updating bylaws to allow opportunities for its athletes to profit. It wants to have those updates in place by 2021. The joint House panel heard from subject matter experts, including Gabe Feldman, director of Tulane University's sports law program. He says states are driving the push for change.
There's no question in my mind that this state action, state activity has pushed the NCAA not only to consider this internally, but also to go to federal Congress and say we need help because we can't have the states doing this on an individualized basis. So I think there's still an important role for states to play to try to push this forward. There's an open question about whether it makes sense for it to ultimately happen on the state-by-state level. I think that creates a lot of problems, but I think this is very important, the discussion that's happening in Florida and other states across the country.
Ramogi Huma is executive director of the National College Players Association. The former University of California Los Angeles football player fielded questions from lawmakers like Representative Brett Haig.
Has there been a study done, even if it's hypothetical, that shows the analytics of what percent of student athletes that would actually affect? Because I think you're talking about a handful of athletes that could potentially benefit off of this.
Haig is concerned that only the most popular athletes in the largest conferences and lucrative sports would benefit. Huma says that's not the case.
When we talk about name, image, and likeness, we're not just talking about the star football player. We're talking about the backup who can start their own business, who can go to their own high school, throw a camp. A lot of things that they can do.
House Speaker Jose Oliva has expressed his support for allowing collegiate athletes to cash in. Meanwhile, outgoing Senate President Bill Galvano has doubts.
I have my own reservations about moving college athletes into the realm of professional athletes in many regards. I think there may be some things that we can do to make it more fair for them, for example, in social media interactions and things of that nature. But, I expect that proposal will need to be thoroughly vetted before any ultimate decision is made.
Each of the college athlete pay bills filed for the 2020 session are waiting for a hearing. I'm Ryan Daly.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaise Gainey, Robbie Gaffney, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to Steve Bosquet and Victoria Dominguez. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Join us every weeknight at this time throughout the 2020 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flafl-cio.org.